I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back to The Stacks. I am your host, Tracy Thomas, reminding you all to check out our social media accounts. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find that all in the show notes, links to all those pages. I'm also on Goodreads if you want to know what I'm reading day to day. So go check that out. Please make sure that you're subscribed to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, I am asking you to rate and review this show. I just wanted to read to you the most recent review we got so you can hear how simple and easy it is to review the show. And it really does go a long way. LaRacha said, quote, Tracy was born to have a podcast about books. Great conversations. I really enjoyed listening to The Stacks. Go listen. Super easy. We're so appreciative. So be like LaRacha and give us a little rating and review on iTunes if that's where you listen to the show. Also, last week I announced that we just launched our Patreon page. Some of you have had questions. So here's what Patreon is. Patreon is a simple way for you to contribute to this podcast every month. And in return, you get cool, exclusive rewards. They're really awesome things like finding out who our next guest is going to be a little bit earlier and exclusive content, as well as being able to contribute questions to this show each week. So if you're interested in becoming a patron, we're calling our patrons members of the Stacks Pack. So if you want to be part of that group, we would really appreciate it. It goes a long way and you can rest easy knowing that you are making independent podcasting a reality. So I thank you so much. If you're able to contribute, we really, really appreciate it. Okay. This week on the podcast, our guest is Aaron Dolores. Aaron is the founder of Black Arrow FC, which is a lifestyle brand at the intersection of soccer and Black culture. This week, with the World Cup starting on Thursday, we discuss soccer and its relationship in the African-American community and in the global Black community. We also talk about the African diaspora, the power of storytelling, and a lot more. Also, Aaron has a super unique relationship to reading as he finds it very challenging. So we discuss his challenges and how they affect his reading life in general. This episode's a little bit different than what you're used to, so I hope that you'll listen and be excited to hear about soccer and all that jazz. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Aaron Dolores. Hi, all, and welcome back to The Stacks. I am Tracy Thomas, and I am here today with my guest, Aaron Dolores. Aaron is the founder of Black Arrow, which is a lifestyle brand that focuses on the intersection of soccer and Black culture. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm Tracy Thomas.
I'm so excited you're here. Aaron, why don't you do a little better job of introducing yourself? Tell the people about you and maybe just a little bit about Black Arrow.
Really, I'm just a brother from Oakland, California. And I was raised in the 80s. And about a year ago, I founded Black Arrow, as you said, which is about the intersection of soccer and Black culture. Did a bunch of other stuff leading up to that, but it looks like this is turning out to be my lifelong project.
Okay.
So it's really sent me on to a deep dive into soccer culture, the politics, the history, and kind of, you know, discovering a lot about the African diaspora and Black history, you know, through soccer.
Awesome. And when did you kind of come to soccer? How did you decide, you know, that it was going to be sports or that it was going to be soccer specifically?
Yeah. So during the last World Cup in 2014, a friend of mine who I won't name his name.
Do I know this friend of yours?
You may. He might be your brother.
Oh, okay. Oh, that friend. Sorry, right. Him. Okay, cool.
Decided that instead of going to Brazil, we should go to Europe and for the World Cup and time it so we're in different parts of Europe when they have their World Cup games happening, with the idea being like, you know, the second best option from going to the games themselves is actually being in the streets, in these cultures and in these communities while they're watching their nation play during the World Cup.
So when you agreed to go on this trip, you weren't a soccer fan?
No, not really.
You just were kind of going to party.
I played when I was in high school, and you know, I didn't dislike it, but I just didn't really have like a huge interest in it. And more than anything, I was just really into baseball and basketball and football, and there's only so many sports that you can follow.
Okay, got it. So you go on this trip with your friends and someone that I may or may not be related to, and what happened? Like how did that end up being the thing that got you into soccer?
Yeah, so the first place that we landed was in Croatia, and we were in this town called Pula, which is right on the coast, and they have a Roman Colosseum. So they have one of the most like intact ancient Roman Colosseums. And the mayor of that town decided the night before to show the World Cup game, Croatia's World Cup game, in that Colosseum. They were playing Brazil, who was the host of the World Cup. So this was, you know, the whole world was watching, and, you know, 15,000 people pile into this, you know, ancient Colosseum, and Croatia actually scored first. So, you know, all these flares are going off and everybody's kind of going crazy. So that really thrusted me into, you know, it was a historical venue, and it was also a historical moment, modern moment for Croatia. And so just kind of thinking about, you know, history and, you know, it's like you're being thrust into the textbooks in right. that moment. And so when I got back, I just started thinking about, you know, where do Black people fit into this, just as a level of curiosity, not wanting to start a business or anything like that. And, you know, as you start to scratch the surfaces in soccer, you find that one, Black people have been playing soccer, you know, since the beginning of time, which is actually where we got the name Black Arrow.
Okay.
This could be an interesting story to tell.
I would like to hear the story.
On this podcast.
Talk about it.
Which is, there is a poet by the name of Gil Scott Heron.
Yes. Very familiar.
You're familiar with him?
I am.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
All right. is this a competition?
Obviously, he, you know, revolution will not be televised. Yeah. And, you know, essentially he paved the way for hip hop. Mm-hmm. And I was doing some research on him when I was looking for, you know, the name of what became Black Arrow, because I wanted to root the name in something that was bringing history forward.
Okay.
And so I stumbled on this, you know, story, which was Gil Scott Heron's father was a professional soccer player.
Oh.
And he was born in Jamaica.
Okay.
Came to the United States, gave birth to Gil Scott Heron, and then was scouted by the Celtic, and which is one of the most, you know, famous teams in Europe. They play in Scotland. So this was in like the mid-40s, I believe.
Okay.
You know, long before Jackie Robinson and some of these other things. So he became the first black player to play for this legendary team, and the fans, because he was really fast and athletic, had nicknamed him the Black Arrow.
Oh.
So
so it's paying homage to him because he was an early famous black. Yeah.
And also, like, one of the things that we do through the brand is seeing soccer as a way to connect the African diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
So myself, just personally really being into Jamaican culture, you know, you have a Jamaican who came to the United States and gave birth to an African-American who had played a large role in music and, the progressive movement through his poetry, and then went to go play overseas. So I think music is a big part of, like, what our brand brings to soccer.
Okay.
Just like hip hop in the NBA kind of have that connection. So I thought that'd be a cool representation of what our brand could try to participate in.
I love that. I want to kind of circle back a little bit to your World Cup trip in 2014. So this year is World Cup 2018.
Mm-hmm.
First question is, now that you're so deeply involved in soccer 4 years later, what are you looking forward to that maybe, you know, you would have missed as a newcomer to soccer 4 years ago?
For this World Cup, actually, we're doing a big travel trip to Colombia.
Okay.
And we're going to Cartagena, which I believe you may have been
there. I just was there
recently.
It's amazing. They have a great little bookstore, too. It's real cute.
Nice.
I wish I remember the name. I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put everything we talk about in the show notes, so don't worry. But I'll put that book. It's like Libros y something.
Awesome. So
super fluent.
Cartagena is we're basically, one of the reasons that we chose that is because, you know, Afro-Latino people are often kind of forgotten when Americans think of, you know, black history and black culture,
sure.
Right? And the slave ships they landed in Brazil and Colombia and the Caribbean,
right,
and the United States.
Cartagena had one of the biggest slave ports in, correct, South America, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And that was basically where, you know, Afro-Colombians, you know, originated. And so, you know, through our trips, actually, when the schedule came out, we saw that Colombia was playing Senegal.
Mm.
And so, you know, just doing some research based on, you know, this is going to be a huge game. It's the third game in the group stage, which is, you know, be a very decisive game for these two teams. And, you know, I was kind of doing some research as to, like, what is the connection between these two places. Off the coast of Senegal is, off the coast of Dakar, is Gori Island, which is where the slavery museum is the point of no return,
okay,
for the slaves.
It's, okay,
one of the places where the slaves were getting processed, mm-hmm, to, you know, get shipped off, and guess where they were going?
Colombia.
Exactly. Bingo. And specifically
Cartagena.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's a historical moment, right? For the African diaspora, we're talking about literally the moment of leaving the continent and arriving in the quote unquote new world. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when you have these two teams that are playing each other in the biggest, you know, tournament on earth, it gives you kind of the incentive to actually find out what the connection between these two,
sure,
places are. And it's obviously very strong. And it's also, what's interesting is that it's really under-researched.
I was just going to say, I mean, I don't feel like that's something that I'm going to hear on ESPN being like, did you, like Alexi Lawless being like, did you know these two countries are connected through the African slave trade?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I would say that there's still a lot of research to be done, like specifically to, like, where were the, you know, exactly where were the slaves coming from, and what was their, you know, just the, right now in the experience for black people in Colombia is very similar still to today as it is in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the Afro-Colombians, have a very rich, you know, music and culture and food. And a lot of it goes directly back to Africa culturally, the sounds and some of their music and some of the foods and stuff like that. So there's still some tracing to be done to kind of, if you were to say, hey, Colombia or Senegal to somebody, people wouldn't really assume that there's that much connected. Of a connection.
I see. That's very cool. I don't even think we did a very good job of explaining what Black Arrow is. I'm now like thinking, I'm like, we're 10 minutes in and maybe people don't quite understand it. But I would love for you kind of just to explain, you know, it's a lifestyle brand, but what does that mean? Like, how can people get involved in Black Arrow? And what does it mean to be involved in Black Arrow? And what are you guys, or what are you trying to do with a brand? I know that's a lot of kind of different questions, but walk us through how it works and how people could be part of Black Arrow.
Yeah. So, you know, what we do is a combination of one, create online content.
Okay.
So we've done some short videos like telling the story of Gil Scott-Heron's father.
Okay.
We did a video called Why Black Folks Love Arsenal. We did a video profiling Atlanta United, which is the MLS team in Atlanta, and how they use hip hop, you know, in their chants and stuff. That their supporters group is called the Footy Mob.
I like that.
And we're filming a documentary currently in Kenya, and by way of also in England and Manchester. So creating digital content, basically doing, you know, narrative based storytelling around the impact that Black people, you know, formerly have and currently have in the sport. And then we also create events, basically, you know, experiences to, you know, engage, you know, ourselves and allies in experiences that are centered around soccer. So, you know, we've done a trip where, you know, we all get on a bus together and sit in the same section and go to an MLS game. We did a party in Atlanta called the Kit Classic, where everybody had to wear a different soccer jersey in order to get in. So that's like an ode to the, you know, 90s NBA throwback jersey culture, right?
Which one did you wear?
I actually wore my girlfriend got me the Korean national team jersey. I wore that jersey.
Were you the only person in that jersey?
Of course.
Proud of you. Very proud.
Of course.
So here's a question, though. Is Black, obviously it's focused on the African diaspora and Black folks and Black culture, but it's not exclusively for Black people. It's just kind of telling this, those stories or sharing those stories with the world, bringing them to the forefront.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like BET, right?
Sure.
Not only Black people
watch,
you know, get
BET.
To watch BET.
Right.
It's just...
But that's the focus of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
got
the
it.
Focus of what we're doing. And I personally encourage everybody, you know, like my girlfriend Jane is Korean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the most famous players in England, Sunny, is Korean. And, you know, that's her favorite player, of course, right? So, you know, this is like what our focus is, because we want to create projects that are rooted in our culture and the things that we know and the things that we understand. But it's not a thing to like segregate
sure.
ourselves from anyone else. And you know, I'm wearing a Japan jersey right now. So, you know, it's also a way to, you know, highlight, you know, seeing ourselves in other cultures as well. Like for
sure.
instance, one of my favorite players is from Belgium and he's on the Belgian national team. So I have been wearing his jersey and it's like and he's Black.
Okay.
Of course. So, you know, as an African American, like, I think it's pretty cool to be able to wear a Belgian national team jersey with a Black eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it allows me to show more interest in, you know, Belgian history and culture
right.
and stuff like that. So.
So it's open. And if people want to like, let's say you're going to be in Atlanta again and you guys are going to do an event, like how do people find out about Black Arrow? Is it all through social media? Is there like newsletter type stuff or?
Yeah, just through our website, Black Arrow FC, our social media. If you just search Black Arrow
I'm asking this because I know you guys are all going to Colombia, and like I kind of wasn't invited. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, in the future, if you guys are going somewhere that I want to go, how do I find out about it? Because you and my brother kind of like planned this trip, and then it was a little awkward in the house, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, we push it out through all of our, you know, social media channels and through our website and through email. So that's one of the things, like, in the digital age is it's, you know, it's like, how do you reach people, mm-hmm. right? It's either they got to be following you, you got to send a text message. So our brand, you know, lives in all of the places where, you know, your eyes are hopefully, you know, looking at. So Facebook, Instagram, a website.
Okay. So yeah. I basically just need to follow Black Arrow if I want to come to Colombia next time.
If you want it, you'll find it.
Okay. So before we start talking a little bit more about books, I do want to ask you, since you are our resident soccer genius, you're the official soccer guru of the Stacks podcast. I need to know, one, who you think is going to win the World Cup. Okay. Two, who you would like to win the World Cup, and three, your dark horse team that you're like, they could, and I hope, but like Germany, you know, that kind of thing, or okay. England, or whoever's supposed to be good.
So I think that Brazil is going to win the World Cup.
Okay.
They're really good at soccer. They have, you know, right now there's, you know, it used to be prior to this season, the three top players in the world are generally considered to be Ronaldo.
Okay.
Plays for Portugal.
I know him.
Messi.
Yes. Lionel.
Of Argentina. Mm-hmm. And then Neymar, who's Brazilian. Yeah. So obviously anytime you're looking at a favorite, you're thinking, you know, whoever has the best player also really has mm-hmm. a really good chance, which is, you know, generally true, but you know, you can't do it yourself. So I would say, like, of the big three, Neymar has a supporting cast of other, like, superstars you know, would lead anyone to believe that Brazil is probably going to win.
Okay. Yeah. So that's your – okay, but who do you want to win? Like, if it were up to you, who would you want to win?
So Nigeria.
Okay.
Yeah. And one, they have really cool uniforms.
They're the green and white.
Yep. Okay. Yep. The Super Eagles. In Africa, basically the two sub-Saharan teams that qualified are Nigeria and Senegal.
Okay.
You also have Egypt and Tunisia. So I'm definitely rooting for Nigeria. You know,
is this because you like them, or is this like an Issa Rae, I'm rooting for anyone black type thing?
It starts as you know, anyone black, but, you know, when you look at the history of soccer, it's really like British colonialization that mm-hmm. brought soccer all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they obviously brought that to Nigeria. So, you know, I think it's just pretty cool to, you know, it's taken time for these countries, for obvious reasons, to, you know, develop the quality that it takes to, like, win the World Cup. And you're starting to get to a point where now, you know, countries like Senegal or Nigeria have some of the infrastructure that's needed and the level of coaching and training and some of these other things. A lot of the Nigerian players are playing in the top leagues. So, you know, there's kind of a an underdog story mm-hmm. to it, which, you know, I'm super excited to see how it all plays out.
Okay. And then the last question was, what's a team that's like kind of like your long shot, or is that Nigeria?
They're a long shot too. They're a long shot. I would say Senegal is, you know, I'm starting to just learn a lot about like Senegalese culture in mm-hmm. Oakland. There's a Senegalese restaurant that I really like to go to. So
do you want to give them a shout out, or?
Bissa Baobab.
Okay, maybe they'll be a sponsor.
There's okay. one in San Francisco and Oakland.
Okay, so you're Senegal, Nigeria, Brazil.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So before we go on to kind of talk about books, I just want to quickly shout out our actual sponsor, which is Audible. They have over 180,000 audiobooks. Their catalog is huge and insane and amazing. And for anybody who listens to this show, you get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. And all you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. It's super easy. It's 30 days for free. And they're our sponsor and they support us. So we want to support them.
Can I sign up?
Yeah. Do you have Audible?
I'm going to get it.
Well, you'll get it. Yeah. And you'll get it for free for 30 days and a book. And you can pick any book you want. You can pick a book about like Senegalese culture. Boom.
That's what I'm
going to
do.
Tie it in. There you go. Okay. Aaron, it's time for you to talk to me about books.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. Let's just start off my favorite kind of first easy softball. What are two books that you love?
Well, my favorite book of all time is Roots.
Alex Haley.
Mainly because I was just so damn proud of myself of not even finishing the book, but just attempting to read it because of its sheer size.
Yeah.
And, you know, reading has always been very challenging for me.
Okay.
I would say it probably took me about 4 months to read that book.
Wow.
Because I can only read in like short periods of time. So that's to this day, you know, one of my favorite books. And I just learned a lot about myself and, you know, and my own family.
Sure. Yeah. And I do know that your dad is similar to my dad, you know, older black men who, you know, from the
South,
from the South of the great American Black diaspora.
Yeah.
And there was a lot. I remember my dad was very important as kids that we watched that movie, like maybe a little young too.
Yeah.
Like maybe, you know, Brady, my brother, and your best friend, you guys are a little older than me, but I feel that maybe it was appropriate for Brady to watch it at 12, but like maybe not for me to watch it at 8.
Right.
But I do, I've never read the book, but I've always had real strong feelings about that book because I know how important it was. And I'm almost scared to go back and read it and watch it, knowing now that it was made in the 70s. And like, I'm sure a little problematic probably, right?
Yeah, for sure. And like more recently, I've started to do some more research into the Black side of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my dad gave me a family tree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm very fortunate that...
That's amazing.
That, you know, there's individuals in my family that have really kept, you know, documented all the history. Mm-hmm. And all, you know, basically like one woman who was a freed slave gave birth to, like, I think it was 7 kids. And that's, and those kids basically are what started our entire family tree.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they have a lot of the history written of, like, the church that they went to and, you know, all of the kind of things that I think come up, you know, later on in, in Roots and, you know, literally tracing it back to, you know, people who were slaves. So, you know, I think it's really, I actually have an aunt that I did some, I recorded her last year. She's 101 years old. And, you know, I got some footage of her before she passes, and she's still alive today, you know, talking about, you know, life in America in 1920s.
Wow.
And, you know, she's lived in Mississippi her entire life. So,
this has got to be a book too, right? You're going to let me write this book?
It's going to be a video because, it'd be a little bit harder to write, but you know, she was, you know, housing the Freedom Riders, and she was, you know, very, ahead of her time, not only for Black folks, but also for women.
Wow.
She went back to school and graduated, got her degree when she was about 65 years old. Cause obviously at that time, women weren't going to college as much. So I say that to say that when one thing that really motivates me to tell or try to tell my family's history is because I know that it's the same for a lot of other Black folks, and a lot of other families didn't have the, you know, luxury or foresight or ability to trace a lot of that, that stuff. So it's all it's what's it powerful about Roots is for other Black people to read a story in and of itself that's really interesting, has an amazing narrative, but is in one way or another the same story that, you know, all of our, you know, ancestors went through in this country.
Right. That's amazing. Well, also just makes me think, like, you actually come from a long line of people who are telling the story of the African diaspora, and now you're doing this with Black Arrow, which is kind of cool.
For sure.
Like, that's like in you, right? Like, you come from a line of storytellers, apparently. That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I really thought about that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm here for, to connect the dots for your life. There you go. Okay, what's another book that you love?
I'm going to go with Game of Thrones.
Mm.
The first one.
Okay.
Another big book.
You like a big book. You just want to sink your teeth into it.
If I'm going to read, I'm going to, you know.
Really get through it.
I'm going to really get through it.
Okay, that's not a book that I have any interest in, but you watch the show.
I watched the show, and I actually read the book after watching the show.
And do you plan on reading the other books, or one was enough?
Well, I got through the first two.
Okay.
And I think I got the point.
You feel good.
Yeah.
Feel like you're strong.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. What about a book that you hate?
I don't really have any books that I hate because, like I said, reading is difficult enough for me. So if a book doesn't catch me, I put it down easily.
Okay, and what makes reading difficult for you?
I just have a very short attention span.
Okay.
And, you know, actually, another funny thing about your brother, when I was young, I was diagnosed with being dyslexic.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Brady's year and a half younger than me. But one of the things that had sent my mom into like a get to try to figure out what was going on with me was I came home and I was like, how come Brady can read better than me? And I'm older than him. So
that's so, you
know,
funny.
Not only did I, was I diagnosed with being dyslexic, but, you know, she actually took me to a therapist who I found out as I got much older, that essentially this therapist's job was to convince me that I was smart when I was really young because I had a hard time reading.
So you felt like behind.
I felt behind and I felt pretty stupid.
Got it.
When I was younger. Luckily I was cocky and confident in a lot of other ways.
Things,
so
yeah.
It didn't actually like get to me.
Right. You were fast. I remember that.
Yeah.
We had a teacher.
I was fast and beautiful.
That you beat. Okay. That's subjective. We had a teacher in elementary school, Miss Stanford, and she was really fast. And I remember she used to always race like the fourth and fifth graders, and like nobody could beat her. And I remember you beat her.
Yes.
And that was like a big deal.
Definitely.
Also,
definitely.
Someone my year beat her, Brian Litke. Also fast, also cocky, also good looking. So there's something there.
For sure.
Yeah,
I mean, when you're young, that actually is like when you think about how do you build your personality and your confidence,
sure.
Right? Like sports is one way. And then like school, like how you socialize,
right.
How you see yourself, like your positioning in the classroom,
sure.
How the teacher responds to you, how the other kids respond to, you know, you socially and academically. So like as we're saying this out loud, I'm thinking to myself how maybe how important sports was because
it gave you a place to kind of shine.
It gave me a place to shine. And now I'm wondering, like, what if I didn't have that? Like,
right.
What would my overall confidence, you know, yeah. be like?
Well, I know in the education system in America, like a lot of Black and brown boys are labeled quote unquote bad because they're not great at school for whatever reason. Sometimes it's that they're dyslexic and
right.
Sometimes it's that they're actually really smart and they're bored. And they don't respond, or sometimes their teacher treats them disrespectfully, so they respond, you know. So it's like if you don't have teachers and parents that are able to kind of zero in on what's going on, and
right.
A kid who has the foresight to say, hey, mom, how come this kid who's younger than me is reading better than me, or whatever it is, like that's how kids kind of get washed out of school, even really smart, you know, critical thinkers, which I, not to compliment you too much, but I think that you are one of those, but it's like, you can be all these things and struggle with math or English or whatever it is. And if you don't have advocates in your house or in your education system,
right.
Like it's so easy to lose that confidence and to, you know, become reclusive as a, in the classroom.
Yeah. And,
or to quote, be called bad. And then you start acting bad.
For sure. And there's also that school just, the way school is set up
right.
doesn't play into like what my strengths are.
Right.
And so I don't have a good memory. So that was it for a big part of it. Like I can take in information, like you could sit there and write down, you know, one word and like, I can't even spell like calendar or catalog. Mm-hmm. Still to this day, I have a hard time spelling things. So in math, you have to have a pretty good memory. In science, you have to, you know, a
right.
lot of it is just regurgitating.
Right, is memorizing.
Some of those things. So, you know, that's when people kind of like, you know, my mom's white. And so I've always been.
Mine too.
And your mom was my mom. And, you know, I always tell people that I was raised with white privilege.
Right.
And I think that, you know, my mom having the money, having the, you know, her prior education
sure.
and, you know, her positioning in life, you know, allowed her to have that foresight and to send me to that therapist. And so, you know, being mixed race, you know, I got to kind of see very clearly, like, what does it mean to have white privilege? And,
right.
And for me, it meant that my mom was really able to navigate me through school
mm-hmm.
and kind of cover some of my weaknesses.
Sure.
Get me in the right classes, the right programmings. You know, in high school, I didn't pass Spanish. And so, you know, you had to pass to graduate. And she just went in. She was just like, you know what? My son can't pass. So you're going to graduate him. And they were like, oh, okay.
They're like, cool. Makes sense. Perfect. Thank you. Your mom's also a little intimidating.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like that makes sense. That's super interesting, though. It's interesting to think about, you know, as I sit here and I talk about books with a lot of different people, that not everybody's relationship with books is the same, and that, you know, the ability to read, whether it be, you know, for pleasure, or you're reading for information and you're dyslexic or you're illiterate or whatever it is, that your relationship to books, everyone's relationship to books is special and unique. And I think that's what makes me love books so much, is that you and I can read the same book and have a totally different experience, because not just what you take from it, but also your experience with the book, like the challenge of it or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's super interesting.
Which is why, like, when I read, I primarily, you know, right now I'm reading soccer books, because...
Well, that was my next question, is what are you currently reading?
I'm reading the book called The Language of the Game.
And it's about soccer.
And basically the author, every chapter is about a certain position. So you have like strikers, goalie, midfielders, defensive players.
Do they still call the position a sweeper? Is that a thing still?
That is...
we used to have that in like North Oakland Little League soccer or whatever.
The higher leagues don't use that as a strategy as much anymore.
I was a strong sweeper, so it's no big deal.
Yeah, yeah. That was a big thing for Americans. We're really into that.
Oh, yeah, we innovated, obviously. Really good. We're so good at soccer. We innovated the sweeper and then didn't make the World Cup. So just nailing it. That's interesting. So it just basically takes the positions and kind of expands on what they do, or does it make it like a broader point?
It's broader. So it will go through a few different things. So like who are some of the famous players to play that position? And then it will talk about, he talks about the like the mental makeup of like, what is it to be a goalie? Mm-hmm. How do you have to be built? Like,
right.
What does it say about your character?
I see.
And then, you know, also he'll tie it into, you know, philosophical things and cultural things. And he also does a really good job of talking about, you know, certain countries that, you know, have, you know, Argentina has had really good strikers.
And, I see. So like culturally, are certain countries like creating like, their cultural personification?
Yeah. And it also goes into the history of soccer a lot, which is I'm glad that I started reading this book, because modern soccer, you know, we think of soccer as this very like, you know, stagnant sport. It's just very simple and always has been like that. But, you know, there was the game of soccer has really, really changed a lot to what we see today. Even to the point where people didn't even move. You just passed the ball around to like different positions and stuff like that. The book goes into certain players and individuals who really revolutionized the sport. One of them being guy from Holland who created this concept of like total soccer, which basically when soccer was first started getting big, all the players kind of, you only played your position. So the defenders passed the ball to the midfielders passed the ball to the strikers, and the strikers scored.
Yes.
And when this guy developed this idea of total soccer, it's basically that like any player on the field at any time could fill in one of these positions.
I see.
And so it made the game a lot more like fluid.
And that's now kind of where we are.
Yeah.
I see. Interesting. I am looking at your book right now, and I just want to make a really just quick point to my listeners. Aaron does something with his books that also drives me absolutely crazy, which is he uses the book jacket as a bookmark. So that's kind of fine, you know, in the first 10 pages. But then when you kind of get halfway through the book, which is what I'm saying, I'll post a picture of this on Instagram. Don't worry. You just completely ruined the book jacket. So just something I'm noticing about you. You're just a blatant disregard for book jackets.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I've never really figured out a good strategy of how to like keep my page. So
a post-it note, a bookmark. I use like an airline ticket. There's a lot of things you could use.
And that's what I do. It's a smorgasbord of like different strategies. So when you see this next week, it could be.
Okay. Cause makes my stomach hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just a little judgy when it comes to book maintenance. What's a book that you loved? great. We're going to take a quick break. Aaron has to use the restroom. We'll be back. All right. While Aaron is indisposed, I'm going to take a second right now to tell you guys about our Patreon page that we just launched. If you're wondering, Patreon is a simple way for you to contribute to this podcast every month. And in return, you get cool exclusive rewards. The first thing that you get, and I think the most amazing thing, is that you get to say that you are a member of the Stacks Pack, which is a title that I lend out to all of my listeners who are patrons. Also, you're going to be able to have special access to add questions to our questionnaire, find out who our upcoming guests are, and a lot more. I promise the perks are pretty awesome. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/thestacks to become a member of the Stacks Pack. It's amazing. My mom did it, of course, because she's my mom, and she figured it out, so it's not that complicated. You just go on there, you decide how much you're able to give each month, you do that, and then you get to rest easy knowing that you're supporting the work that it takes to put on a podcast that you enjoy. So thank you in advance so much for becoming part of the Stacks Pack. Thank you for contributing to what we're doing here. You're greatly appreciated, and that's it, and here comes Aaron. And we're back. Listen, we're just we podcast until we have to stop to use the restroom, and then we come back, and then we just keep going. Okay, so here's a good one. This is a one that I love because this is how I get more books for me to read. What's a book that you love to recommend to people?
A few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I read The Power of Now. Have you read that?
But I know all about it.
I wasn't going through anything in my life, but I was having some curiosity about religion and spirituality and, you know, trying to find ways that I could manipulate my mind into, getting the feelings I wanted to feel and getting the things out of life that I wanted to get. And I'm not like a religious person, so I was just kind of taken to, you know, by that book. Didn't really know much about anything when I read it, and it did a lot for me. It's a book that sometimes I'll go back on and like have to refresh myself from the principles. But you know, I recommend it to people because I feel like once you read it once, you'll understand the framework of, you know, what he's getting across in the book, and you end up, I think, using it at pivotal times in your life.
Nice. What about a good book that someone's recommended to you?
One time I was at Venice Beach and someone recommended I read the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, did you read it?
I read like half of it.
Okay, good enough. And, close enough.
I can't say I retained much from the book, but it was really interesting. Just all the wild stories that are in that, and all the gods and
that's very Venice Beach of you. Also, it just totally feels on brand. When you're reading, how do you read? Do you use an ebook or do you use the actual book, audiobook?
I definitely use a hard copy.
Okay.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. Well, you should maybe consider doing audiobook because you can, I mean, you listen to podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I mean, depending on the audiobook, obviously Audible has that great free trial for you. But it's just, you know, the audibletrial.com/thestacks. It's free 30-day free audiobook. No big deal.
The thing that's hard for me about that is that in my phone is so much other, there's so many other things that I have access to. So that's why I always go with the hard copy, because like I just carry that around and it forces me to read it.
Yeah, I see. I understand. I'm not huge on audiobooks, but I have found a few that I like.
I mean, everyone should get Audible. But
yeah, everyone should get Audible because there are good audiobooks. Yeah. I personally like to read, but I've started listening to audiobooks just like when I take a shower and like doing other, like when I can't be reading, but I want to be reading, which is always. Okay, what's a book where you feel like maybe you learned a lot, or like, you know, you were exposed to new ideas or something like that?
I'm actually finishing up a book on Joe Kadenge, who is the most famous Kenyan soccer player of all time. And we are doing a documentary on him. So someone wrote a biography of his life and what he means to Kenyan soccer. So the book really allowed me to better understand, you know, when you're filming a documentary, you are also creating a new story. And so I wanted to better understand who he was, and I also needed to better understand Kenyan society and culture. So I've learned a lot.
That's cool. When does that documentary come out?
Not until the end of the year.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you follow Black Arrow FC, you'll be able to find it. Are there any books that you feel, you know, proud that you've read?
Yeah. As I think I read Malcolm X as a young adult.
Sure. Such a good book.
And
the autobiography of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another Alex Haley.
And, you know, I tried to read it when I was a little bit younger, and I don't think I was like really ready.
Same exact thing happened to me.
To understand it. So I went back on it because it's like, as a Black man, you gotta
read it.
If somebody asks you, you gotta say that you read it.
You wanna keep that card.
It was a defensive read.
Sure. But it's so good, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
It was just, well, we're recording this in May, but it was just his birthday the other day. Anyways.
Shout out.
93rd birthday.
To the brother.
Yeah. What about any books that you're embarrassed that you've read?
You see, I feel like finishing a book is a sense of accomplishment. Okay. Like I said, as someone who doesn't read a lot or has a hard time reading.
Any book feels like check plus.
Yeah, and you should never be embarrassed to read something.
That's nice of you to say that. I read, you know, 50 Shades of Grey. I read all three, and that's embarrassing for me. I did it, but embarrassed. What about any books that maybe you feel embarrassed that you've never read, or books that you feel like I really should have read this book by now, kind of books?
I mean, when I was in school, I don't think that I read any book that was ever assigned to me.
So basically every book that was ever assigned, you're embarrassed that you never read. Good for you.
Pretty much.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your childhood, did you have a book that maybe you did end up reading that you liked? Maybe it wasn't assigned to you, but just maybe a favorite childhood book?
Yeah. My mom used to read to me this. She had this book of like Native American like fables, stories and stuff like that. And that book always really just like captured my imagination when I was younger, because it's like when you're that young and you're, you know, raised in America in this certain, you know, culture that has, you know, this structure that you don't really realize is very specific to your country and your nation. When you're reading stories of Native Americans and the way that they tell stories and relate to the world, it's literally like just blows your mind,
right?
The imagination and the creativity and some of the other stuff. So there's a book about, there's a story about how this one wolf ate his anus. Some other animals when he was sleeping and cut it off and put it on the fire that he was making, and then he woke up and he ate it.
That stuck with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was probably 7. I don't know why my mom was reading me that, you know, that type of stuff. I think she just wanted to ingrain in me maybe a different
perspective of the world. Sure.
Yeah.
Children's books. Okay. This is the one that I stole from the New York Times that I just love so much. If you could require the President of the United States to read one book, what would it be? The current one.
The current one.
Yeah.
No, another book that I just read is a group of speeches from Marcus Garvey. And it's really, again, like it's interesting when you are a lot older and you start to refine these historical figures that you were, you know, taught when you were younger.
But like didn't quite get.
But you didn't quite get it.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, Marcus Garvey's whole thing, you know, outside of like he saw at the African people, you know, globally as one nation.
Mm-hmm.
And he really wanted to connect Black people globally. And he wanted us to operate as a nation. He wanted us to pool our resources together. He wanted us to basically, his idea was like, we're never going to get this through these white systems and these white governments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was really just ahead of his time because, you know, this was in like the 20s,
right?
In the 30s. And, you know, to read some of the things that he was talking about in that time that are still very relevant today,
mm-hmm.
is really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I would have Trump read that. I don't think that he would really, you know, get it, but.
Well, you gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, it's just to mess with him a little bit.
Okay, I think my last question for you is just, can you think of any books that you've read that you would want to turn into a movie or TV show? Especially since you're a Game of Thrones fan. The next Game of Thrones, maybe?
I don't have a good answer for that.
That's okay. You don't have to have a good answer. I was hoping that you were going to say that book that you really like, The Alchemist.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a movie? I feel like it could be.
Yeah.
Like an adventure story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it too personal?
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess that could be a really good movie. And it is, there's a clear narrative there and, you know, a lot of action and different things that happen. I think visually that would be cool because,
right? Yeah.
When someone told me to read that book, I didn't really know, like, you know, what that world was going to look like, mm-hmm. that book exists in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'd be cool for, you know, some creatives to
maybe like Ryan Coogler.
Yeah.
Black Panther Part 2, The Alchemist's Journey.
Let's do it.
Alchemist to Wakanda. Okay, well, I mean, I don't have any more questions for you unless you have anything else you want to say.
Nope.
No, you're done. Get me out of here. Amazing. Well, so Aaron and I will be back next week. We are talking about, in honor of the World Cup, we're talking about Franklin Foer's book, How Soccer Explains the World, An Unlikely Theory of Globalization. So that will be next Wednesday. And until then, y'all stay reading, and we'll see you in the stacks. All right, y'all, we are out of here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our guest, Aaron Dolores, for joining us this week. Aaron will be back next week. We're going to discuss Franklin Foer's book, How Soccer Explains the World. Make sure that you're subscribed to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to us through iTunes, we really appreciate any rating or review you can leave. The Stacks Patreon page is now up. If you want to become one of our supporters, a member of our Stacks pack, you go to patreon.com/thestacks. You pledge your monthly donation. We love it. We appreciate it. We thank you from the bottom of our heart. And in return, we're going to give you special access to the show. So please go to patreon.com/thestacks, become a member of the Stacks pack. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite. Our theme music comes from Tagirigis, and this show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.